So I don't think there's a real right or wrong. I don't think any of the two is
Yeah,
right or
there's a
wrong.
gray area in the middle.
Well, it's the expectation that was set.
Yeah.
And who and if the expectation is respected, then that's the person who's right or wrong, right? Like it's not a morality thing for me. It's
Yeah.
more of a, well, what did you guys agree on? Done. It's like, imagine if you're in a couple. I mean, this is extreme, but if you're in a couple and you've agreed to an open relationship, and then one of the two gets mad because you went and you slept with someone else, like, well, wait a minute, this was our agreement.
Sure.
So whereas the relationship where there's no agreement, the one who
Yeah.
sleeps is obviously cheating because there was no agreement. So that's how I see it.
I agree. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Laundry Basket Podcast. We are rambling with you this week and so happy to be doing this.
Yeah. Can I just start by saying our names are Rita and Salima
Yeah,
because we never
absolutely.
introduced
I
ourselves. And
know.
all the other podcasts I listen to, people are so gung ho on like, this is
Yes.
me and this is who I am and whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
And we're just like, we're here. You don't need to know us, but
You
we're
don't
here.
know.
No, that's good. I think you're right to try and get us to do that.
Once in a while, we can just remind people who we are and our names.
Yes, I love it. Okay, so before we hit record, I was showing Rita some old family videos, and this is like maybe a millennial coded thing, but if you are a millennial or someone who grew up with like the VHS video files, highly recommend getting them converted because it's just like a little treasure chest of memories that we like
Yeah.
unlocked. And it's such a, I was actually talking with my mom about it the other day because it's such a unique thing that our generation, I think, I mean, of course, generations before, if you were like rich, maybe your family had a camera and was able to document your life, but it wasn't in the same, like as extensive as what we grew up with. And of course, the generation now has even more like cell phone videos constantly of their life, but
Yeah, and like a little bit like what I was telling you. The one physically that you were showing me about us being at the beach and a bunch of different situations, I knew it by heart because I would watch it all the time, especially in the winter. I would sit there and I would watch like when we were at the beach to feel better. And nowadays, there's so many videos. Like people have so many videos on their phone. Like how much do they rewatch the same video
True.
once and again?
Not very often.
You know?
Yeah.
So. And even like I remember when we the camera we would get, I liked it because it felt like a camera. Like you had to like slide your hand
Oh
and
yeah,
like
the old
hold. Yeah.
camcorders. Yes. And you can like
You hold
watch
it.
it playing as you're
Oh,
recording.
that was like a hard, that was like the fancier one where like you could like pull out the screen
Yeah.
and then you had to adjust the little eyepiece and it had
Yeah.
like that rubber band thingy
You
that
put
you
your
could
eye
like
against.
but one eye only.
You're really locked in when you have that job.
Yeah. It was so
Well,
important.
and also you like you were you and all of our older my older cousins have always been telling me these stories about this beach house that we would all spend time at. And it was like for me, I was so young. I was like 2 years old when this all happened. And people would tell me, oh, yeah, you spoke Arabic. And I'm like, I have no recollection of any of this. But then to be able to watch it back, I'm like, oh, like it's still, I don't have recollection of it, but that was me. Like I was there.
Yeah, it's
It's just
hilarious because
weird.
in our memory, you full on participated. Like that was life, you know.
Yeah.
But I
Oh,
guess in
yeah.
your memory, it's
It's
pre, like
blurry.
before it was cognitive. Yeah, like we have more memories of that part of your life than
Yes.
you.
Such
Yeah.
a rip. Yeah. Like my mom was saying, she doesn't have any memories or like even like recollection of what she was like at that age, too. But even older, like 6 and stuff, because she just doesn't have videos. Like she
Yeah.
has a few pictures and you can make out some memories from pictures. But there's something about video that just like takes
Yeah.
it to another level. It like untaps something in your brain. It's really cool. So.
And I remember when, so just for like the process of like first you would film in that camcorder and they were like mini tapes. And
Yes.
then you would have to convert the mini tape to a VHS.
Yeah, or you would put it
And
inside of that like VHS thing where you could like insert it
oh,
and then play that.
Oh, yes, you remember that? Yeah. And that, but there was a way that you would connect two VHSs together.
Oh,
you would run the whole thing, and that would be copying it from one VHS to the other. Like,
okay,
that's why I had a copy of it. You, your family had a copy of it because we would copy them. Like,
right.
But the way that you have to copy it is by connecting two VHSs together and running the whole thing through.
Okay.
There was no such thing as like transferring a file.
No, no, no. It was all like physical. You had to have the tapes there and all the right tools. And I remember sometimes we would just like plug in the camera to the TV.
To the TV, yes.
That was
with the three buttons, the red, white, yellow, or red, white, green, or whatever, like those three things.
Yeah.
Like one for image, one for sound, and another one, God knows, for what.
The cables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It anyway, was great. I just
blast
yeah.
for the bath. this is something that I think we have to talk about because we haven't really checked in about what's happening in Palestine for a long time. But I don't know how many of you heard about Aaron Bushnell this week. He was a I believe he was an active duty member of the military here in the United States, and he self-immolated, which is where you set yourself on fire in an, as an act of protest against the genocide in Palestine, basically saying that he can't be complicit in the genocide, and he just, this was the only way that he saw of taking a stance.
Did he die?
Yes, he did. So rest in peace to Aaron Bushnell. And I can read his statement that he said because he like live streamed it before he did it. And then he live streamed the action. But his...
wait, was he in Palestine? Like, is this...
No, he was here. I think he was outside of the like the embassy, but he was in the U.S.
Okay.
When he did it. But anyway, I just think it's not the first time. So first of all, the media is like really not pushing the story from what I've seen. Like a lot of people just don't know about it. And it's not the first time that someone has protested in this way, right? Like we know this has happened before in other countries. And I think it's always looked at in a variety of different ways. Like some people really respect it, some people really judge it and think it's like a crazy thing to do. But I think the reality is like, as he was an Air Force member, and so as someone who is like in the military and hearing about things firsthand, it really shows how disturbing and how horrible. Like this genocide is just absolutely devastating, and for the media to try and cover it up and for people to just try and act like everything is just normal, which to be fair, like I've been trying to do that too, because it's just painful to watch. But I think the reality is, like, especially here in the US, like we're all in a way complicit because our government is funding this and continues to support this genocide. So I just I'm continuously disgusted in our country and in Israel. Like they've been bombing Rafah, which is where they've been telling people to go, innocent people. And it's just, it's really just disgusting. And I have a lot of respect for Aaron Bushnell, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So
I assume, yeah, when you are in that, sometimes I think about that. I didn't think about it for someone who's like in the U.S. part of the army in the U.S.
Right.
But I was thinking about it for the Israeli soldiers, the Israeli like army people, and I'm like,
right,
what? Like how much? How? And
how can you witness this on a daily basis and just continue to feel confident in what you're doing and have no guilt? Like,
have no guilt and also very little excuse. And it's, there's no like right words to talk about this really, but
right.
for example, sometimes in other wars, I was thinking about, for example, if there's a war, okay, Sudan is going through civil war right now.
Right.
And there's like different history and different like power structures. And I can somehow understand how one group of people over some time has been hurt and has developed this like hate towards another group because maybe they, whatever, like these dynamics that have shaped some sort of trauma for a while that right. would lead someone to do something.
Right.
Quite honestly, Israelis, they live really well. Like their country is very well in terms of infrastructure, in terms of technological advancements, in right. terms of, you know, they were the ones who were oppressing the Palestinians since forever. It's not like they're the ones who are traumatized. And, you know, yes, of course, if you lost a family member because there was like the bombing of Hamas of the festival or things mm-hmm. like that, yes, you are personally traumatized, but you're the minority in a whole population of, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that's not enough to traumatize a whole population for the entire army to go and do the atrocities that they're doing right now.
Right.
So I don't get it. Like, I don't know how you can be chilling in Israel, having a very good life mm-hmm. because they did have very good, or they probably still do, actually.
They do, yeah.
You know? And then all of a sudden pick up a, you know, a gun or a drone or a tank and just go and kill off people because Israel has mandatory subscription. Is that how they call it? Like the one where you have to go to war. Like they have mandatory. And I think this is an important detail that is very often left out.
Right.
Every single Israeli men and women from the age of 18 to 20, 2 years, have mandatory, like they have to go to the army.
Right.
So it is countrywide. This is not like
a choice.
It's not like a choice. Or it's not like in the US where you have no choice in life and the army is your best bet to like move forward. No, it's just every single young person, at least for mm-hmm. 2 years, is part of the military. So the entire fucking country is involved in this. Right. It's like, you can't just say you're not.
Yeah.
And I don't get it. Like, I don't know how you go from chilling in Tel Aviv, beautiful city, mm-hmm. going to the club, you have your, you know, tech job, you're like, do your parties and stuff. And then all of a sudden you go and you kill off kids.
Yeah.
You kill off people who are lining up to get bread. You're doing like, how? How does
it's that a level. Sense? I just like the only way that I can wrap my head around it is like, it's a level of brainwashing, you know, like imagine if every person, even just like active duty members, like, and I think that's what makes what Aaron Bushnell did so powerful is that he was an active duty member and he saw what he saw and this was his reaction to it, right? Instead of being brainwashed and just drinking the Kool-Aid and believing that you're like fighting for freedom or whatever, he was really in touch with like reality. Whereas I feel like a lot of these soldiers have to just disconnect and disassociate and convince themselves and just drink the Kool-Aid that the media is pushing, both the Israeli media and the US media, the global media a lot of the times is pushing that this is like a just war and it's a fair war, right? Like, and
but it's like the action of blowing up people and kids.
Right, right.
How do you just go home and sleep after you've done that? Like,
and a lot of people are justifying it with the October 7th, you know, Hamas incident. And it's crazy. I mean, here in Olympia, there was a protest a few weeks ago where they, at the Capitol building, they put little flags. So they had Palestinian flags and Israeli flags. And it was like a vigil that they did where they put a flag for each child that's been killed, each Palestinian kid and each Israeli kid. And there were like a teeny tiny group of Israeli flags and thousands of Palestinian flags. So it's like the way that the media, it was just a really good visual representation of how the media has taken this one incident and made this the catalyst for all of these other deaths. And in the past, before October 7th, all of these deaths that have happened with Palestinians that were innocent. And it's just, it's sickening. Like, it really is disturbing.
Facing history. History started on October 7th.
Right.
Before October 7th, you know, everyone's minding their own business, according to the way the media is talking, which obviously is not. But also, it's like, that's not how humanity works. It's like, if they somebody comes and kills my brother, like it happens in the US every day, there's shootings and there's people who get killed. Does that mean that me and my entire neighborhood are going to go and kill off
their entire family
of the people? Exactly, the family and their and everybody and their whole neighborhood and every. No, we would never accept something like that.
No.
So why are we accepting it now at like at military level?
Right. And everyone who was so up in arms about children being killed on October 7th seemed to just have gone back to complete. Like uninterest with the whole situation now, right? Like they don't give a shit about any of the other children.
Oh my god! Yes. When October 7th happened, so many Jewish people that I follow online or something needed to just express all the sorrow that they felt, all the injustice that they felt as Jews who, you know, couldn't live peacefully or whatever, all of this, like. Human feelings that they had that were devastated. And now they are quiet as fuck. Okay. Yeah. So I am just, and it's terrible because it sounds like I'm saying like Jewish is like, oh, I know not all Jewish people are thinking like that.
It was primarily like Zionist Jews who were acting this way, right? Like there's plenty of Jewish people who actually do still care and who are still speaking out. It's just, it was loud on that week. It was really loud. And it just felt like this outpouring, and not just Jewish people, of a lot of white people who were just saying how disgusted they were and how horrible this was. But then now no one cares. Yeah. Like, no one is disgusted. Everyone thinks it's fine and justified because I don't know.
Because Palestinians have no agency on the political sphere or the economic sphere of the world.
Right.
And Israelis do. They have built up over the last 60 years the best friendship with the US out of all the countries in the Middle East.
Right.
And that they have agency that that Palestinians don't have. And that's it. It's just innocence being vilified. And that's the world we live in.
Yeah.
I haven't been at all vocal about it anymore because what are you going to say? You're just you're going to say very angry things every day. Well, what I did do is there's the UN has a branch that is dedicated to providing food and you can donate to that. So that's what I'm doing. I just subscribe to donate every month to that.
That's great.
So when I donated, it should go to the Palestinian conflict. Like primarily, that's what I did. But quite honestly, they give to many countries, not just, and it's food. So I was like, well, at least it's that. Because I know I'm not going to, I know whatever I post, whatever I say, first of all, it's only going to, the only people who are going to resonate with it are people who already think the way I think. It's not like all of a sudden I'm going to convince someone. Because if somebody wants to be convinced, there's tons of information out there. Even if the media is not doing the best job, okay?
Yeah.
So, like, it takes one Google search on the topic for one of the newspapers to show up to be Al Jazeera. That's all you need. You only need one newspaper saying what's happening. It's not like, oh, well, the New York Times is not talking about it, so I don't know. I don't know anything. Okay, no.
Right.
So, number one, it's not like I'm going to convince people or anything. And number two, there are protests. There are things happening. It makes no difference.
That's the most depressing part about it. Yeah.
The world powers are going to do what they want to do, whether or not the rest of us agree.
Right. Yeah. Another great organization that I've been donating to is ANERA, ANERA.org. And they're not connected to the UN, but they provide food as well and aid directly. And they were recommended to me from a friend she's another food blogger who's Palestinian and her family is there. So they're very reputable. So if you're looking for places to show some support, that's
somewhere to start. It's the best, in my opinion, it's the best way. I mean, always everyone was doing something about it. It's fine. But in my little life of how, you know, the little outreach that I have to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. It still just never feels, it's never enough. And even like self-immolation, like this man taking mm-hmm. his life for this cause, like it was a beautiful like symbol. It's devastating at the same time. And still you have people who are going to mock it. And
that's disgusting.
It's disgusting. And it's just, nothing is enough. And it's just heartbreaking that this is the world that we live in. So mm-hmm. anyway, okay. We got to change.
But no, thanks for bringing that up. I've been thinking about it too. I'm like, oh, we haven't brought it up again.
Yeah.
But yeah, once in a while we do. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I get agitated just like talking. It's so hard to keep calm.
Yeah.
But we're going to take a little.
I mean, on that note, like, I don't know who the fuck I'm going to vote for with elections coming up. I don't think we need to do deep dive on that, but just let me just throw it out there.
I know. Even without the Palestinian conflict, it's not like your choices are like,
it's trash. You know, it's a repeat of last time. I mean, it's not good. It's really
It's
not
like
good.
A repeat, but worse because time has passed and I'm like, even at the molecular level, I'm like, wait a minute. These guys, like, it's your last few years on Earth.
Right.
It's really what you want to do.
Go enjoy yourself. Play some golf. Do what you do best.
Go to the beach.
Like, scamming people. Like,
Go have a hot chocolate in a mountain because you probably can't ski by now, but you could probably just enjoy a nice landscape. I don't know. Like, why are you trying to run a country?
Seriously.
At this age. Like, somehow
they both managed to get worse. Like Yeah, they've both definitely gotten worse. It's awful.
Biden managed to lose the respect of everyone.
He never really had it. He never really had it, but now it's like we hate him, actually. Like, it's not even about respect anymore.
The only respect he was running on was two things. One, because he used to work with Obama, and two, because he was not Trump.
Literally, like, that was the main thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he has nothing.
It's a shit show. Actually, you know, I've mentioned before in the podcast that I have American citizenship and how shitty it is for tax purposes.
Oh, yeah.
This year, I completely and utterly...
She renounced.
Undeniably, I am renouncing it. Like, I just have to go through the hoops of it. But I was always kind of like, should I keep it? Should I not? Yeah. Maybe I should just kind of like... It's a cost that I could just assume in my life, but just you know, just in case I could have it, I could invest in the U.S. if I want one day. Or I was thinking like business-wise, and I'm like, fuck that shit.
Yeah, the cons outweigh the pros. Mm-mm. Like, it's just not.
There's just
it.
No, you know how they talk about push factors and pull factors?
Yep.
There is no pull factor.
Yeah.
At all. Everything is a push.
Yeah, it's just a shit show. You don't want anything to do with this.
I don't
want to
be funding any of that shit show.
Right.
That's really because, and I mean, in Canada also, specifically with wars, like, I know we do some stuff that I don't agree with, but it's not, obviously it's not at the level. And I'm like, no, but my tax dollars go to this.
Yeah.
Because I'm American, so I have to. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, anyways, I don't know how y'all voting.
It's awful.
When is it that you're voting?
November.
Like November?
November. Yeah. We'll get there. It'll be horrible. Like, I really don't know what I'm not voting for Trump, and I'm don't want to vote for Biden either. So I'm like, I'm just not going to vote. I'm going to vote for the Green Party. Like, what the fuck?
All right. You would vote. Yeah.
But it's like a wasted vote anyway. So it's stupid. It's really fucked up. Mm-hmm. And then people are all these like white liberals are really angry at people who are saying what I'm saying. That they're not going to vote for Biden because they're like, well, then you're just supporting Trump. And it's like, no, I just don't, I can't
do a better job at choosing a better candidate
either. Yeah. Like, it's not about, it's just fucked up anyway.
Yeah. Anyway. It's always like, that's like out of the entire nation. That's what you produced. Like, that's it. Right.
It's
those pathetic. Are the options.
It's so pathetic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the impunity with which politicians walk on this earth. Is beyond me. As a human race, we have so many problems. We have so many problems.
None of them getting solved.
No. Yeah. Okay. So now, guys, we will turn the ship around because I know when you tune into the laundry basket, you're just minding, you know, your own business. You're probably taking a walk, doing the laundry,
right,
driving somewhere,
mm-hmm.
and not watching the news for that reason.
Right.
So, okay. I want to issue an official thank you to every person in this world that has been involved in the movement of making dressed up outfits match comfortable shoes.
Ooh, yeah.
A moment of deep appreciation for this.
Wow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, in the times that I was high school and university and young adult, actually, like, it covered important years of my life.
Yeah.
You could not ever, nunca, like, jamás, never, you could never have running shoes with a suit.
Right.
Running shoes with a skirt.
Yeah.
Or a dress. Or even put together with, even if it's a pair of jeans. You just, if you were going to go with running shoes, it's because you were running or you were like.
Yeah. You had to have like flats or like heels, something horribly uncomfortable and just like impractical.
Yeah. And there was no way around it. You actually couldn't. Like, I'm sure maybe like the youngers who are born in the 90s, people born in the 90s are probably didn't suffer it as much.
Yeah.
But people born in the 2000s, like, they have no idea that it was a crime. Like, you would look like the craziest person on earth to wear full-on running shoes. And even I applaud that they even made the jump, because it started gradually. It started with the little cute running shoes, like flat, the little Pumas,
like sneakers, sneakers.
And now people are putting on like Nikes or like full-on, like big ass, like you could wear it at the basketball court.
Yeah.
But you're wearing it with a suit. And you look good. And
it looks good. That's the thing. Like, they've really pulled it off. They're pioneers.
Oh, they made us. I know when I started seeing like images of women put together and wearing running shoes and how they like forced it on us as a look.
Yeah.
And I am grateful for that.
Yeah, they'll do it with like a pair of slacks and like a like a more casual tee sometimes. And I'm like, oh, but it still looks put together, but not like you're trying too hard. Like, you're just the right amount of like professional, but also you're not taking yourself too seriously. And I love it.
Yeah. And I feel like it really has that message of first my brain, then my look.
Yeah.
Like, first my brain, then my clothes. Even though the clothes look great. I still look great, you know, but also my brain is more important than if I'm wearing the right stilettos.
Yeah. They're stilettos and like business attire in general had such a weird chokehold on us, like with wearing it to the clubs and like wearing it everywhere.
To the movies.
Like, what the hell are we thinking? Like, no one's enjoying this. Like, a pencil skirt to the movies? I want to eat popcorn and like relax. If anything, I want to unbutton my jeans. I don't want a pencil skirt like sucking me in.
Yeah, but and I still respect that look. I still think it's great. You can still wear like skinny jeans with like stilettos or whatever, but you have options now. Whereas before we didn't. And it was everything. Like, you go have a coffee with your friend.
Yeah.
Those stilettos are on. You can't. Yeah. You go to meet your real estate agent. Those stilettos are on. Like, you can't just go out in running shoes.
But I think they've done such a good job at shifting it that now when you see someone like that, it almost like ages them. It's like, oh, that's like someone who's taking life a little too seriously, or they're just like at such a high corporate level that they can't unclench their asshole ever. Like, that's just, it's just like, it's signaling something not great. It's like, okay.
So true. You remember how the other podcast, I was like, sometimes I stop myself from overdressing.
Yes.
It probably also has some roots from there, because I do see how I'll have the heels on and I'm like, oh, let's tone this down a little bit.
Like, but you can overdress without like going all out corporate heels.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I know what you mean.
And hey, I still love the heels. I own several pairs and I do wear them once in a while. But it's no longer a rule. Like, it's become like, oh, I really want to do this look now.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's special. It's not like a requirement. Yeah. I love that.
So I think this is amazing. I feel like, you know how in like maybe the there was like moments in life that women in fashion were liberated, like when the corset was no longer
corset tops.
Yeah, I'm sure women were like, oh, finally somebody
I can said breathe. It.
You know,
yeah, yeah.
Then there was like adding pockets to our clothes. That was probably a really big thing. Like, yeah. Fine. Just being able jeans. Pants. Yeah, women allowed to wear jeans. So
yeah.
This whole like being allowed to wear running shoes with and still be put together, I think is another big moment
it's
in
a
women's
moment
liberation.
In history, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Oh,
it
I
is.
Love it.
So I wow. thank I thank all everyone who was involved in that.
Same.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of like corporate, there was like a viral video on TikTok that I saw, and it was this Gen Z employee who works a 9-to-5 in a corporate company, and he was making a video basically saying, or excuse me, so there was, so there's this girl on TikTok who her name is Corporate Natalie, and she does all these like funny videos about corporate life and Zoom meetings and work attire, all that stuff. And she made a video talking about a Gen Z employee who was told that he had a meeting that he needed to come to last minute, like the day before or something. The next day at 8 a.m., they were going to have a meeting. And the Gen Z employee said, sorry, like I'm so ugh. Like it was a text or like a Teams message. And he said like, ugh, so sorry. I booked an 8 a.m. workout class. I can't make it. And so the corporate lady was like really pissed on this podcast that they had. And she was saying like, that's bullshit. Like you need to come in. And also like saying, ugh, is just like so unprofessional. And so that went viral. And then a Gen Z employee stitched the video. So like made a follow up to the video and basically was saying, well, this is me. And I actually work 9-to-5. I'm salaried or contracted from 9-to-5. So there's no reason that I should be required to come in at 8. And I booked this workout class. It's like an expensive class in advance. So I need to be able to do that without feeling like guilty. And so it was this whole debate. Turns out that they're not even connected. Like it was all just for drama and gossip and virality on TikTok. But I just thought it was an interesting conversation because it's like, who do we think is in the right or the wrong?
It's funny because one of the points I have
yeah.
in my list of things to talk about today is slightly yeah. related. We can get to it after.
Yeah.
I think I will definitely agree with the aspect that this person is contracted from 9-to-5. I think yeah. that's important to respect people's time in any shape, you know, is important.
Right.
And this is just rules and laws, okay?
Right.
So if you're a company owner and you want to provide yourself with the right to ask someone to come earlier, that has to be in the contract. Like the person has to be in agreement with that since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where it kind of all starts. It's like setting the expectations correctly.
Yeah.
In any relationship, it's like that. So the employee-employee relationship, we should have the same, you know, expectations and stuff.
Right.
So if somebody's contract says you may be asked to come, like your hours may shift a little earlier or a little later.
Yeah.
Never surpassing, you know, 40 hours a week. And you agree to that. Then yeah, the employee had agreed to it and like he signed on it.
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a real right or wrong. I don't think any of the two is
yeah.
right
there's
or wrong.
There's a gray area in the middle.
Well, it's the expectation that was set.
Yeah.
And if the expectation is respected, then that's the person who's right or wrong, right? Like mm-hmm. it's not a morality thing for me. It's
yeah.
more of a, well, what did you guys agree on?
Mm-hmm.
Done. It's like, imagine if you're in a couple. I mean, this is extreme. But if you're in a couple and you've agreed to an open relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the two gets mad because you went and you slept with someone else. Like, well, wait a minute. This was our agreement.
Sure.
So whereas the relationship where there's no agreement, the one
yeah.
who sleeps is obviously cheating because there mm-hmm. was no agreement. So that's how I see it.
I agree. But I think like, I guess where I am stuck for myself is if it was in the contract that like sometimes you may have to be mm-hmm. required to come in early, but it was still the day before that they were like, okay, 8 a.m. tomorrow. I, as an employee, I'd probably be like, well, I do have this workout. Like, I would probably put my own like health and fitness before the thing. And I think it's also another gray area of like, well, how much notice am I supposed to get before this? So it's like, I think it's also a difference in like commitment to the job. And I think that's one thing that I love about Gen Z is that they kind of just don't give a fuck about the like, I think what I've seen from what I've seen, a lot of them are putting their own like mental health and well-being before their job. And I love to see it because I think especially like the boomers and the millennials sometimes too, we put our job above everything else. It's like at the expense of our health and our mental health and all of it. And I just think I respect the hell out of them for just being like, no, I can't. I wish I could, but I can't.
So I have mixed feelings on that. And that's exactly what I wrote in my notes.
Yeah.
That I have mixed feelings on specifically this mental health thing. Mm. And right. And, but before I dive there, I want to say another parallel too. Because this generation, they, like you said, don't really give a fuck about their job.
Yeah.
But they have a really high sense of entitlement for what customer service should be. Mm. And you can't have both. Because guess what? The person giving you customer service is also an employee.
Right.
So if that employee doesn't give a shit about their job the same way you don't give a shit about your job, do not expect good customer service. And this is what I feel this generation hasn't been in the workforce long enough or is too selfish to see this. Because, yo, the economy and the companies, it's us. It's actually us human beings. So if all of us don't give a shit, don't fucking have expectations that you're going to get productivity going up, customer service being like satisfactory. Like, it's just not going to happen if we all don't give a fuck about our jobs. So now I'm going to sound like super like old school right wing Protestant, but that's the thing. If you want productivity, you have to give a fuck. And I am a person who believes in productivity. So I do want my employees to give a fuck. I do want, as a generation of workers out there in the workforce, to give a fuck. And this is where I would transition into this whole mental health thing and where I go back and forth. Because I'm like, and tying it back to what we were talking about earlier about Palestine, I'm like, yo, some people are going through fucking war. You know, these immigrants who go to Europe and they can't adapt easily because they come from war-torn countries and people hate on them because it takes them a while to actually get over their traumas and be like, they'll come to the Netherlands, you know, from a war-torn country, and then they are not able to just have a job. They're not able, you know what I mean? We're not patient with them. Mm-hmm. And look at all the baggage they're carrying. And then you have this, you know, this person who had, you know, one stressful day at work and now needs to recover from like a stressful email. And I'm like, no, grow some backbones, okay? Have like a bit of resilience here. This is not a mental health issue.
Right.
This is stress. Mm-hmm. This is the cost of progress. If you want to be, you know, someone who's going to accomplish things in life, you need to be challenged.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you're not being enslaved here. Like, chill. You're getting your paycheck at the end. You're not like, I'm not talking abuse at work or like, you know, molestation or yes, those are stress. Like those, that's a mental health issue. So I go back and forth. I'm like, no, you don't come from a war-torn country. No, you're not like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't get to bring this mental health issue into your productivity at work.
Mm-hmm.
And an email is not a mental health issue, okay? Unless in the email you're being like bullied or something. So I think, and I go back and forth because yes, of course, you shouldn't like, your stress at work also shouldn't make you cray cray. But like, I think we need to grow a little more resilience in general. So
I respect that. Yeah, I was gonna say, I think a lot of the people who don't give a fuck are people who are working in the corporate world where it's like a customer service, like, well, customer service job or a job where they're, you know, writing emails or doing coding or something that's not like urgent to everyday life. But like you said, like those people of all people should be able to show up with a little bit less stress, because yeah. it's not like they're having to deal with patients who are dying or mm-hmm. deal with teaching the next generation. Like it is a more low key job. So those people of all people should be able to just show up and get it done. But yeah.
So why is work responsible for your mental health? You know,
I think the mental health thing is is more about boundaries with mm-hmm. like not going overtime without pay, or like not being expected to do more than what's contractually obligated.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the mental, it's not that the job is making your mental health bad. It's that you need to put in just as much time outside of work into, you know, having a healthy workout routine, having, being able to like have a healthy meal plan or whatever, you know, yeah. having time for those important things in your life, which is a very privileged thing to worry about, right? Like,
yeah.
it's not something exactly. that most people have the time or energy to care about. So it's, I definitely see your side of things, but I think for me, like, I really like don't love the corporate world. So I am always just like, supporting anyone who's going to kind of not give a fuck.
But not, here's the thing. It doesn't just stay in the corporate world. And I think right. giving up this thing, it's like this attitude will follow these people wherever they go. And guess what? If they're working in like a bakery, for example, that is owned by a mom and pop, they're going to have the same fucking attitude, and it's not fair. You know what I mean?
I don't know that that's true, though. I think there's a right profession for every person. And I think mm-hmm. maybe you're in a job that you genuinely don't think is doing any good for people. So you don't really give a shit because it makes no difference. Like maybe you work at Amazon and you're doing mm-hmm. marketing, and it's like Amazon is destroying the planet. So I don't really give a shit about making Amazon more money with my marketing job. So I'm just going to come in, I'm going to do the bare minimum, and I'm going to clock out. And so I feel like in that kind of job, the person who doesn't care, yeah. maybe they're going to go to a nonprofit and they're going to actually be passionate and excited, and they're going to show up differently.
I think I have more of a, the way you do one thing is the way you do everything mindset. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you're there at that moment, do your best. Okay. Because you're not, I mean, how much are we hurting? Amazon is here and we all use sure. Amazon. If you never use Amazon, I will respect that work ethic because you fundamentally apply your values of, I believe Amazon is destroying everything, so I will not use it, but this is the only job I can get. Okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet you anything, everyone who works at Amazon also uses Amazon. So like, fuck off. Like, no, it's not right. That I am ethically not supportive of. I think wherever you are, you should give it your all, unless you're in the military and you start feeling like they're asking you to kill innocent people. But like that, yeah. that's what I mean by the extremes. That's what I mean by no, a stressful email is not a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. Coming from a war zone and having to adapt to new society, that is a real mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody asking you to work a little harder at Amazon is not a big deal. Somebody asking you to kill innocent people, yes, that is a big deal. So we need nuances in the way we like,
sure.
you know, assess how much we will dedicate our effort into right. things or not.
Totally.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay. I feel I have strong opinions today.
Yeah, you do. Okay, what do you do when you're at someone's house and you ask for a glass of water and they bring you a cup and there's like little floaty things in it, like hair or like little like dirt? Like, do you say like, ew, like, can I get a new glass? Or do you just subtly set it down and not take a drink? Do you go dump it out? Do you drink it? Like, what do you do? Because this has happened to me multiple times. I don't like. Not much recently. I think I've weeded out those kinds of people from my life, but like, damn. And it's not even like their fault half the time, but it's a traumatizing.
Yeah, I would not drink it. So yeah. We'll start with that. Yeah. Number one, I will not drink it.
Correct answer.
Number two, if I am not directly friends with the person, mm-hmm. like let's say it's like I was invited there through someone else or whatever,
yeah.
I will casually leave the glass untouched.
Yeah.
And carry on. like not say anything. Yeah. If I have a direct relationship with a person, I will say something and I will probably myself go dump the thing, wash the glass and pour it again.
There we go. Okay. That's like the mature thing to do, I think.
I might not say anything. I'll just go pour it and do it again. If no one saw me, better.
Yeah.
But if somebody asks, I'll just say, oh, something got in the glass.
Oh, like, yeah.
Something got in the glass. I won't say, oh, this glass was given to me dirty, you know?
Yes. Okay. What if it happens at a restaurant or like if there's like a plate or a fork that's dirty?
Yeah, I have no shame and will tell the waiter right away to bring me something new because now we're in an establishment that their whole job is to give me food and drink. So, yeah.
Cool. Love it.
Yeah. Okay, guys, thanks for listening and connecting every week here. And we will catch you next week.
Bye.
Wait, we haven't done sharing. Oh, sharing.
Okay.
Oops. Do you have something to share?
Yes. Okay. So this one is kind of maybe niche if you're into marketing, but it's called Ahead of the Curve with Coco Moco. And she's just this, I think she's Gen Z, but she is this marketing expert who just talks about a lot of things in relation to social media and like virality and different marketing theories and like case studies. And I just find it, all of her episodes, fascinating. So
I'm just looking at it and it looks like she keeps them also entertaining.
Super entertaining. Yeah. And she basically writes an essay for each episode. So it's like her really like thoughtfully breaking things down. It's not just like, it's not a ramble, but it's very like, she puts a lot of thought and attention into them. So
thanks for sharing.
Yeah. If you enjoy our podcast, please share it with someone you love and we will catch you next week.
Bye.